This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good evening, my name is Sue and you're listening to Hear Me Roar. Co-hosting with me tonight are the lovely Cheryl and Lisa. Welcome.
Good evening.
I can't hear you, Cheryl. Are you there, darling?
Oh, you there, darling?
I'm here. Oh, okay. I'm always told off for not talking loud enough.
Not actually, too much, check out her nails, Lisa.
I know, they're very girly.
They're very girly. Goodness.
They're very pretty.
They're very pretty. They're a bright red. They're like a candy apple red.
They are.
So if you're into girls with candy apple red nail polish, I'm in the right place.
It's me.
Hot.
We're going to be talking some current affairs. And then later on this hour, we're going to be talking to Suzanne Hammond. She is a Women's Industrial Officer. This is such a big title. Women's Industrial Officer Community Public Sector Union. I think I've missed an in there. Suzanne Hammond is the Federal Women's Industrial Officer and she's worked as an industrial relations researcher, an academic, a trade union activist and an advocate for community and women's groups. And tonight we are talking equal pay.
I'd like some equal pay.
I'd like more pay.
It's an interesting topic because I guess for me I've always thought, well, you know, I'm in a job, I'm in the government sector and I am paid equal to my male counterparts. So I don't kind of get it. Lisa?
Yeah, no, I work for the government as well, so I can't complain. I get paid very well for what I do, so I've never been faced with that sort of situation at all. But I understand there's a lot of industries that do discriminate.
No, yeah, there are. We'll find out about them. Cheryl?
I believe that we're all paid quite the same. I'm on an award with a fairly big financial folk.
That's a fancy term, isn't it?
That's a very fancy term. We're the same. We're all fairly well equal.
Because the thing is that there's a lot more casual workers, female-based casual workers.
Yes.
So there's a lot of inequity that way. And I guess we're going to go through that with Suzanne and find out, because there are women retiring now who weren't paid equally in years gone by, and they're now retiring on absolutely nothing. So there's poverty coming about because of this pay inequity issue. So that's going to be really interesting.
It will be good.
Give us something to think about for our retirements, won't it?
I know. Mm. Cheryl, tell us what's happening in our world.
Well, in our world, the thing that has jumped out at me this week is the announcement, the hullabaloo, the commotion that Chief Commissioner Simon Overland has created by saying that he will be allowing police officers to be paid whilst they walk in our Pride March. Everybody in the papers seems to be going on about should they be paid, would they be paid for a baby's Pride March, for a hetero Pride March, would they be paid? I'm like, well, does it matter?
I don't care. Yes, of course. They can be paid for anything. Does it matter? Is it that much of an issue?
For mine, I mean, I'm reading it from a different angle to you. I couldn't give a rat's about whether or not they're paid. I'm taking more umbrage to the fact that why do these straight folk and baby-making folk believe that they need a Pride March?
Do you think that's the reason? Do you think they're just disgruntled because they haven't got a march?
That's the
Should we call it beige?
Gist of definitely beige.
A beige march.
You're going down Fitzroy Street, you know, you're going, hey, we're beige, we're beige.
That's the slant that I have seen, albeit that's in the Herald Sun over my lunch break. But that's what I think it is personally, and I think, well, bugger you.
Well, I think if is it to do with the actual gay and lesbian people who are in the police force that are allowed to vote, or is it anyone who in the police force is allowed to vote?
The voting actually was in the Herald Sun. It was one of those polls.
Right. Oh, okay.
You could do one of those online polls, and I did it several times, of course, on different computers.
Oh, right.
Go see.
Yeah, I'm not silly.
And as far as the marching though, is it all police officers that are allowed to march? You know, if you were friends of gay and lesbians, obviously, you know, you might want to support them as well.
It wasn't just the GLOWS marching, and it wasn't So it was just the police force. So it's a police contingent as a part of. So you'd have joy marching going down, and then you'd have the police force.
I think it's important to be out there and evident in the community that the police force is actually supporting the gay community. I think it's a great thing.
Yeah,
certainly to have a visible presence to say, you know, we're not the homophobes that we used to be. If you do have trouble, you don't have to just get to a GLOW. You can come to anybody. You can front up at your local police station if you've got an issue. I think it's important to get that message out there that you don't just have to rely on that little small group of GLOWs.
Yeah. The thing that was interesting in the Herald Sun, thank you for knocking the microphone discreetly, Lisa. The thing that was interesting is that...
Thanks for sharing it with everybody.
Oh, it's okay. I'm here to help. The poll question was actually, should on-duty gay and lesbian police officers be allowed to march in the gay pride parade? Now, the word allowed in itself is a nasty word because it's permission.
Yes, yeah.
It doesn't... That word to me is actually quite contentious. You don't think?
No.
Don't care.
No.
No. No,
I think
heavy
it's a strange question.
It's
just the way it's worded is
well, it depends
just
on,
odd.
It depends on whether or not they're rostered on somewhere and they're needed somewhere else. I mean, I think there's a need. If, for example, if you're rostered on to manage the football or wherever, whatever is on or whatever, and you just don't walk away from your post.
Oh, you're going to go march now.
I'm kind of with you on that.
Yeah.
Because that's what I've sort of been toying with my brain about. How is it going to work? Are you going to be rostered on to march or will you be abandoning ship to march? Like,
yeah.
That's
good point.
That's the bit that I've
questioned. Yeah, you're actually paying people to come. The taxpayers' money, I get it, is going on board to pay police officers who wouldn't necessarily be on duty at that time.
So if you just wanted to earn a bit of extra cash, you could
pay them more. They don't get paid enough anyway.
I'll go and march in the march. I mean, it's word that question, I think, is worded a bit oddly.
Strangely enough for the Herald Sun, I would say.
Quite beige.
Quite beige.
The beige probably get it.
The beige get it. It's mind you, I love my straight beigies, and I would definitely march in a beige parade unless they're far from
the
beige.
The beige don't need one.
The beige don't. But they have Bad Hair Day beige.
Yeah, but
come
we're
on.
Not having a Celebrate Bad Hair Day beige march. Jeez.
Can't we?
No.
We could celebrate your nails. Interestingly
that's
enough,
worth celebrating.
That's true. I'm looking at him thinking, whew. On October 29th, the GLOW's the lovely Gabby, who's off having a lovely night tonight. I saw her before. She's coming in to talk about domestic violence as part of Community Safety Month. So we can ask her a bit more about that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And then Christine was the first to march in the Pride as a police officer, was she not?
Christine Nixon. Yeah,
I believe she
might have been. Yeah.
We're all very excited about that.
Two or three she did. The other big news item, I guess, is PFLAG are calling for donations so that they can continue with their advertising.
That's the posh word. The advertising.
Damn, I should have remembered my posh words today. I'll just give you a quick read here. The Parents and Friends and Lesbians of Gays, PFLAG, group has called for donations to help fund a new series of marriage equality advertisements consisting of television, radio and print spots.
Okay, well, we've got it here, so we put it on Lisa, and if you haven't heard it, have a listen and see what you think.
I am the proud mother of two sons, the eldest gay, the youngest straight. My gay son should have the same right as his brother, including marrying the person he loves. A recent national opinion poll showed that 60% of Australians believe that same-sex couples should have this right. Mr. Rudd, my son is not a second-rate citizen. What do you think he is? Other countries are legally recognising same-sex marriage. Show your leadership and do the same.
Authorised by Shelley Argent, Brisbane.
Don't you just love that? She's telling off Mr. Rudd.
I think that's
Mr. Rudd?
Mr. Rudd. Get your act together.
I must say, the first time I heard that, it gave me goosebumps because it is such a valid point. Mm. I mean, I've got two beautiful little boys, and strangely enough, I think my oldest one might be a little bit gay, and good luck to him if he is, but... my issue as a mother is, why the hell shouldn't he be allowed to marry whoever the hell he wants?
Yeah.
And I just think he's not a second-class citizen. He's a fabulous child. Hi, Jackson.
Mummy just came out for you, sweetie.
Oh, no, he knows.
The TV ads are going to end in about 2 weeks. And basically, PFLAG want to keep publicising the issue and encourage debate and keep marriage equality on the agenda. So to do this, they're actually looking for more donations. And I'm fully behind them, and I certainly will be donating something. Mind you, it's not going to be the $50,000 that they need to put on the ad.
It'd be nice if we had that floating around.
Might be $50. But it certainly is a great campaign. Now, if you look up YouTube and type in PFLAG Shelley Argent, she also does a 6-minute interview about her role within PFLAG and what she's doing. She was given an Order of Australia or something recently. I was looking. It was a very... because I only saw it briefly today.
I think for her work for PFLAG, yeah, she was given the Order of Australia, yes.
Yeah, and why shouldn't she?
Good on her. So if you want to make a donation, visit PFLAG and have a look and check it out. It's actually PFLAG Brisbane, but I'm sure that there's something going on here. You're listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9. I'd like to just go through a phone call we had from Tom. Hello, lovely Tom. He says, stop reading the Herald Sun and believing it. Tom, I think I love you.
We didn't say we believed it. We just said,
oh, no, it's believable.
It.
There's no place like home.
Oh, that's right. That's correct, yes.
It is such a crap newspaper. Yes, I did say that on air. We've also got a text in from the Casey who, we're definitely in agreement with you. What is Moomba if not for all straights, gay, babies, clowns, etc.? Maybe not the clowns. It's not nice, is it? Weird clowns.
Kind of a bit frightening.
Some people look for things to complain about.
Of course I do.
Yes, but then what would we do if we didn't complain?
Well, not so much. Yes, everybody likes to complain, but imagine how boring it would be if we all agreed to the same thing.
I agree with you. Tonight we're actually talking to Suzanne Hammond. She's the Women's Industrial Officer for the Community Public Sector Union. We are going to be talking equal pay, which I am, okay, in one way, saying I don't know enough about it. So welcome, Suzanne.
Thank you for inviting me. It's great to be here with a group of women, because usually when I'm talking about equal pay, I'm trying to justify to men. Men often set women's wages. So it's great to be here with a group of women.
Well, you're definitely welcome. I guess, yeah, I also get that, I was talking about, I'm doing equal pay, and they go, oh, women get the same pay. Or what if I've got a truck that needs unloading and a man's going to do it quicker? And you get into these discussions and you just think, I just want to put my hands up and walk away. You must have had thousands of those.
Yeah, talking about equal pay is pretty frustrating, because we've been doing it for, the last century here in Australia, and we seem to be getting nowhere fast. We have had some improvements, but people still really sort of don't understand the concepts of what we talk about when we talk about pay equity, equal pay, and the gender gap. Often people, when we hear about the gender gap, they say, well, hold on, you get 84% of the workforce. Well, that's when we're talking about the gender gap, we're talking about an aggregate figure. And then people will say, but you've got equal pay. If you do the same job as me, you get equal pay. Well, yes, that's true. But the real problem is the problem with what we call pay equity, that women's jobs aren't properly paid for the skill and value of the work that they do. So that's what we're really on about, is having women's work properly paid.
So pay equity is different to equal pay.
Yeah. It's unlawful to pay a man or a woman or people doing the same jobs differently. But pay equity, the problem we have in Australia is that women work in occupations and jobs and industries that are poorly paid. Their work that they do isn't properly valued.
Why do you think that is? Is the common figures as to say why this is happening?
Well, it's an interesting, sort of going through the battles that we've had in the last few years, it's quite often that people will say that, women choose low pay. They want to work in those sorts of jobs. But when you think about it, I want you to think out there in listener land, the sort of work that a childcare worker does compared to, say, a bricklayer. Now, think of the job that they do. Childcare worker, it earns about $750 a week. A bricklayer earns about $1,000 a week. Now, think of the sorts of skills that those workers do. Another good example to think of is someone like a school support staff or teacher's aides, the sorts of work that they do when they're, you know, administering medical things to kids. They're often left in control of the classroom, all that sort of stuff. They get $38,000 a year.
I'm a teacher and they get pitiful wages. Absolutely. And they can work twice as hard as me on some days.
That's right. Mm. One of the problems we have in that sector is that they're lowly paid, but they're also, a lot of them are on short-term contracts. Now, a lot of, again, going back to what people might argue that, oh, well, they choose these jobs, and they do choose those jobs, and they like their jobs, but that doesn't excuse not paying them properly for the work that they do. So, yeah, you know, it's a matter of saying, well, hold on, women choose to work at these jobs like aged care. Another perfect example, women work as personal carers in the aged care industry. They get $14-15 bucks an hour. Now, can you imagine all the changes that have happened in the workforce in aged care, in the aged care industry over the last, 10 years? They're involved in, things like Dying with Dignity legislation, all sorts of things about the Privacy Act, all the sorts of things that they need to know. They're not just wandering around sort of wiping the floors. They have very responsible jobs.
But that can be male or female. I mean, you could have a male teacher aide. I mean, I have sensational male teacher aides. So it kind of...
Yeah, you can.
It's not a fight just for women. Mm. It's a fight for low wages as well.
That's right. It is a fight for low wages. The problem that we have with it causing a gender problem is that those jobs tend to be predominated by women, so, predominantly employed in those jobs, so that we get a gender outcome. And also a lot of them have been associated historically with women's work. Oh, childcare, that's a woman's job.
Mm, true. I guess, and also males find it hard to get into childcare because of the stigma that they're attached. And
absolutely.
Whereas a woman, it's a nurturer, it's a mum. Mm. You get a job. And it fits in, a lot of the teachers I know or people I know, school holidays are a big issue for women. So they choose jobs that
work with the family
rather than working to a corporate level. So I'm assuming that this is the reason why we have, the men's club associations where they reach higher ceiling levels and get higher pay, because women women can or are more likely to choose jobs focused around the family rather than their own professional. Mm.
Yeah, well, it's true to say that women still take the responsibility of looking after the family. If we look at, the ABS studies on who does the housework and that, and really, it's quite interesting to look at it, because if you look at over the age groups, men in all age groups do much less housework than women.
Yes.
Now, because of... that's news, isn't it?
we could print it in the Sun. Let's do a poll.
That's news, isn't it? But, and also it's that thing about, women have to, of course, go in and out of the workforce to deliver the child, and we see that, therefore men are more likely to be considered to be the stable workforce, whereas that's not true,
It does make us look less reliable, doesn't it, when we have to take a break every couple of years, but that's such a small window, and if we don't make these babies, you're not going to have any workers later. We are investing in your future. Get your head around it.
That's right. Well, for 20 or 30 years, we've also been involved in the battle for a paid parental leave system, which we've finally got. Until we balance those sorts of issues of women and childcare, the ability to be able to go back into the workforce as well, we're going to have problems with getting equal wages for men and women. We certainly, if we look at most employment, we see that dreadful pyramid of men at the top and women at the bottom. But as I said, the real issue I think that we need to look at is the issue of the undervaluation of the sort of work that women do. Because we've been told over the years that, you know, these sorts of things, you know, employers are going to wake up to the fact that they're not paying women properly and that sort of thing. We've been told the market will correct for it. We've been told that education policies, once women get educated,
Hang on. I think I already am.
Yeah, that's well, you know. But we were told this was going to, you know, cure the equal pay problem. It hasn't happened. No. So what we need is policies that actually properly value and revalue the work that women do. Look at their skills. You know, look at why it is that they're in these low-paid occupations, because they're not low-skilled. Try and tell me that...
I would much rather be a bricklayer than work in a childcare centre. Seriously. I mean, I love my children, but geez, they're hard work. And these people, they are being charged with the job of raising our children. That's a much more responsible job than...
Well, you're right. Jobs
with a bunch of bricks. Not saying that bricklayers are, you know, a bunch of dumbasses that, you know, can't do anything else. Not to say that at all. But when you look at the greater picture, the jobs that you mentioned, the people that are looking after our elderly, the people that have paid their taxes all their lives to give us this social system that we have, they deserve to be looked after by quality people. They've also got to put up with the family that, you know, don't like this and don't like that. That's a high-stress job, just the same as, you know, teachers and the childcare workers who are being put in these caretaker roles of our children. That's a high-stress job. Give me a bunch of bricks any day.
Yeah, and you're paid so minimally. I mean, as a teacher, you have to be a police officer, a nurse.
Absolutely.
You have to be so many things.
Counselor, mentor.
Yeah.
As well as educator.
I'm exhausted. So why, after 40 years, are we still earning then less?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned the 40 years, because this year, at the end of October, is the anniversary of Zelda DiPrano chaining herself to the Arbitration Commission, or court it was in those days, in Bourke Street.
Zelda.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well,
how fantastic.
One of the later things she did was she went on the trams and only paid half the train fare. She went on the tram and only paid part of the tram fare because she wasn't getting paid the same as men. So, you know, sort of this was 40 years ago, we had the first equal pay decision. Now, it didn't flow through, and that was what she was protesting about. So since then, we've had a number of sort of equal pay decisions, legal decisions from the tribunals, which have closed that gap. But one of the real problems that we've had in the last few years has been changes in the industrial relations system, the watering down and the taking away of things from awards, the movement towards individual collective AWAs. You know, we just had the last election fought over the issue of work choices. Well, work choices was a disaster for women. Mm. We know that individual bargaining is the idea of particularly women individually bargaining their contract is just sort of some sort of fiction, really. So women, we know that women in unions do better, that they have better rates of pay. So we saw that we've seen over time, we've seen the reducing of the effectiveness of, and the provision of good wages and conditions through awards. We've seen them go from what was a fair day's pay to now being a safety net. Now, when we consider that more women rely on awards than men, that's a real problem for women. So we've seen that effect the outcome of pay equity. We've seen just recently we saw the Fair Pay Commission, which is now defunct, not grant an increase in the minimum wage. Now, women are more likely to be reliant on the minimum wage as well, so that's a problem for women, and I can see that that's going to create greater problems in the next year or so with the widening of the gap as well. So we've got certain factors, policy decisions that have affected the wage outcomes as well, and that's where we've got to look at the moment at. You know, we've now got this new thing, Fair Work Australia, and we've got to make sure that that delivers on the issue of pay equity and delivers for women.
So we've got still lots to do. We're here talking to Suzanne about equal pay and pay equity. I would like to just understand a bit more about superannuation and the inequity that happens in that field for women. Could you explain a bit more about that to us?
Yeah, well, there are a few issues with superannuation, of course. If we look at, you know, take for instance that if we acknowledge there's a gender pay gap of, you know, 15-16%, over a lifetime of employment, that's a lot of money.
It's going to be awful.
You know, like if we work it out, it works out to be about $500,000 in lost wages. So, you know, I don't know about you, but it takes me a long time to save $500,000.
Absolutely.
The other issue is that if we look at superannuation payouts now, in 2004, the average payout to men was about $110,000, whereas women was about $37,000. So women have about a third of superannuation when they head into their retirement. We know that women are more likely to be living on the poverty line in retirement as well. We also know that women tend, because of the responsibility of looking after the family and raising kids, that they spend time in and out of the workforce. So, you know, we've got times when they're paid their super and times when they don't get super. One of the issues that we're fighting about at the moment and going to take the fight up to the government is about the payment of superannuation on the new paid maternity leave system. We're really pleased to have a paid maternity leave system, but we need also for that superannuation to be provided while people are on the paid maternity leave. But yeah, so super, it does hold a problem, because not only are we poor in our working life, but we're poor in our older life as well. When we considered in the past if we had, you know, a reasonable pension system, health system and all those sorts of things provided for by the public purse, well, that was okay. But now we're told that we have to look after our own retirement while we've got to fix up pay equity as well.
So there are, because of maternity leave, because we're leave to have kids, or because the kids are sick and we generally are the main carers, we're basically having two-thirds less, is that right, on the whole, of superannuation by
those
figures?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we have about a third. Women have about a third of what men have when they get into retirement. Yeah, and again, that issue of if men are on higher wages, they're, of course, you know, the super is a percentage of your wage rate, so you're getting, you know, less.
Shafted twice.
Yeah, that's right.
And by that stage, we've divorced them anyway. Oh, sorry, just a personal reflection.
And then they can hand it over.
I saw the light.
That's a real problem, because one of the problems is that you've got now a lot of women in their sort of mid-40s and 50s who, you know, quite often the case where the husband goes off to look for...
fresher fields.
Yeah, that's right. And the women who have had commitments to the casual workforce over their lifetime, they may have worked 2 or 3 days a week, but, you know, they've got no super. Mm. While there is provision in the Family Law Act to do something about, you know, do something about it, but still women are faced with not having super. And again, it brings us back to the problem that we have a fairly high casual workforce in Australia. About 30% of the workforce is casual. Now, if you earn under, you know, I think it's about $450 a month from one employer, you don't get your 9% superannuation. So, you know, in casual work, a lot of people work a couple of jobs. So they're not getting super. So, you know, that's a real issue that we have to look at. We at the moment arguing that super should be paid on all hours work, not just on, you know, the fact that you've reached that 450 threshold.
So much to say. We've got a text in from Joe. As a carer, I endorse all that you say about pay and recognition. Keep up the good work.
Thank
you. That's a really alarming statistic. Like, that's I know that since having my kids that... You know, you do take time off when they're sick, and school holidays, you work sort of around that as well. And being casual gives you the opportunity to do that kind of work. But holy crack, I'm going to be knackered when I get old, aren't I?
Yeah, like, I'm stuffed, and I'm
seriously?
In a professional job.
Yeah.
And I also know women who have had professional jobs. They may not have had degrees and bachelors, because I'm in early 40s, and... Mm. Some women didn't and didn't did or didn't get degrees then. Mm. You know, now it's pretty much you come out of uni, you get a degree. Yeah. You know, I guess that's kind of commonplace more so than before, and even less so, I guess, in the next generation back from me. But the women who I know who had professional jobs, were well paid, stopped to have families, are now out of the workforce for 6 or 7 years, cannot enter at that level that they were at, and are now looking at these low-paid jobs that we've been talking about and having to go in, and then they're going to be paid casually or cash in hand or whatever it is. Yeah. And they're going to be, I guess, like you're saying, Suzanne, poverty of the future.
Mm. Yeah, one of the issues is, you know, sort of, again, this sort of going back into the labour force. Well, we want quality part-time work, and we want it to be paid properly. In a lot of circumstances, women with professional qualifications, they're in industries, as we say, you know, the C industries, caring, community, childcare, cleaning and clerks, and they may have professional qualifications, but those professional qualifications and skills have been valued on a gender basis historically, so they're paid less. If we look at the income that, say, you know, a professional community care worker earns compared to a lawyer or someone like that, huge differences in salaries. So, you know, and the value that's attached to that work. So, again, we get back to this problem of not valuing and paying women's work for whether it's skilled work or, well, I shouldn't say qualified work compared to work with particular skills. They're still undervalued mainly on a gender basis or because of gender factors of influence, their pay arrangements.
I'm just flapping out.
I think of 20 points when you're talking, and then because I'm so lost in what you're saying, and then it's the break, and I go, oh, okay.
I'm actually sitting here mentally calculating how much more do I need to put into my super. It's like...
I've had to up mine to 7% to the highest amount because of having children.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. It was the way I had to do it to try and catch up.
It's a scary prospect. And the other, you know, prospect we have to think about with, you know, women being casual and part-time employers is access to leave arrangements. Now, this doesn't only affect, you know, things like maternity leave and that. It affects things like carers leave, sick leave. I notice that one of your issues that you take up is breast cancer. Any woman who gets ill, who's a casual worker, who doesn't have sick leave behind her, well, what happens to you then? You know, these are really important issues for women. The proper, you know, proper access to leave, proper access to sick leave. Now, these were the issues that, you know, under the work choices legislation, a lot of those things were, you know, sort of were lost to women. So, you know, we're gradually sort of fighting back for them. We now have sort of standards, but we need to make sure that all those sorts of issues, when we think about women in the workforce, we need to think about a lot of issues.
It's coming across to me that we not only need to think about women in the workforce, what we need to focus on is these, what we classify as these women's kind of jobs, the undervaluing of these amazing carer jobs. Mm. And most of those jobs involve the young, the sick or the elderly. Am I correct on that?
But I always say to people, don't work with kids. It's a bit like, you know, you say to actors who are going, you know, don't work with kids or animals, because if you're involved in a caring role with kids, if you look at, you know, sort of ABS statistics on wages, any of the jobs that are associated with teaching, caring for kids or caring for even, you know, elderly, they're all really poorly paid.
We were supposed to love it. Because we're nurturers, remember?
Well, that's right. And look, women who work, well, people who work in these sectors do love their job. But that, as I said, that doesn't excuse underpaying them and not valuing them properly.
Doesn't give us the right to be ripped off.
Mm. Yeah, and it does, because they say, oh, well, you want to work in with school holidays, and you want to get pregnant, and you want to spend time with the kids. Therefore, you can do this amazing job at a menial pay. So, Suzanne, what can we do about it?
Well, one of the things that we're doing, at the moment we've got sort of a new industrial relations framework, which is providing a set of minimum standards, but we need to be careful, one, of the award modernisation process, that it doesn't take more things out of awards. We need to do something about, I think, the last minimum wage decision. We need to have an increase there. We need to be able to take test cases to have the work properly valued. We had in Queensland just recently community care workers. My comrades in the Australian Services Union took a case where they had community care workers' work revalued, and it granted pay rises to all those community care workers. So we need to be able to take cases to the Industrial Commission. We need to be able to bargain. We need to have proper access to bargaining. We know that women who are covered by collective agreements do better in pay outcomes than women who aren't. So we need to have access to bargaining. We need to have access to test cases, and we also need other means, things like programs and policies. Unfortunately, employers have been a bit slow to do anything about equal pay. All of the cases that we've taken in the tribunals have been, the employers have objected to them. So I think that sitting around waiting and saying, oh, well, the market will adjust, or employers will gradually, work out that it's more efficient for them to have a proper functioning labour market, that doesn't seem to be happening. So we need to be able
getting
to
rubbed
take
off
cases.
The feet, don't worry,
to
have go and workers, do your nails. Women's it's not really good enough anymore.
No, that's right. No.
You're listening to Hear Him Roar on Joy 94.9. We had a call from Jo from Campbell. She said that she's a teacher, and with the new agreement, she's better paid than other professions, and absolutely the AAU are doing an amazing job. I agree with you completely, Jo.
Now, just shifting a little bit, you've recently been to the Ernies, Sue.
Yeah.
Tell us about them and some of the winners.
Yeah, the Ernies is a great night. We hold it in New South Wales Parliament every year. My organisation, National Pay Equity Coalition, we've been doing it for 17 years with Dr. Meredith Bergman, Yvette Andrews and Linda Burney. This year, we haven't got what we call the Gold Ernie. That went to Danny Nalia from the Catch the Fire Ministries this year, who said made a statement that the bushfires in Victoria were God's retribution for the Victorian abortion law reform.
But the link.
That's right. But they're sort of,
so glad they cleared up. The Herald Sun doesn't have to do a poll now.
Damn. Yeah. Those insightful polls.
What else have we got?
It's amazing that we have various categories. We have a political category. That's previously, Tony Abbott had won that a few times on a statement like a bad boss is a little like a bad father or a bad husband. Notwithstanding all his faults, you find he tends to do more good than harm. We've had a sporting one that's called the Warnie, and actually the trophy for that is a mobile phone.
I was going to say a keg. Quite an affair.
But the sporting went to Dockich one year, Yelena's father, for saying that more than 40% of women in tennis are lesbians. I couldn't stand it if Yelena turned out to be one of them. I'd kill myself.
I can't wait for her to announce that she's gay. That'll be so good.
It'll be a party.
But can you do me a favour? Just read that one that you've got written down the bottom of the page there. That's got to be my favourite.
Yeah, well, George Pell won a Gold Ernie one year for saying abortion is a worse scandal than priests sexually abusing young people. So that was a good one.
And what these are true quotes. Now, this is the Ernie's book. It's a pink book with a flying pig on it. It's 1,000 Terrible Things Australian Men Have Said About Women by Meredith Bergman and Yvette Andrews. Thank you so much, Suzanne, for coming in to our show and talking to us. And we'd love to have you back if you're interested.
That'd be fantastic.
I just want to leave everybody with this one quote. Now, this quote is out of the Ernie's book. This is from Martin Ferguson, the ACTU president. He called women unionists campaigning for paid maternity leave. Now, hold on to your bras, girls. Hairy-legged femocrats. On that note, we'll catch you next week. Good evening.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9. Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.